Columbia Workshop presents number 19 of 26 by Corwin. Fragment from A Lost Cause. A View of the Patriot Demosthenes. Written and directed by Norman Corwin, with an original musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. In this program, the words of Demosthenes are his own, and in no instance invented.
No great empire has ever lasted. Egypt, Babylonia, Persia, Greece, Rome. They were destroyed, not by conquerors, but by decay. They were powerful, but all of them forgot one thing, that the only civilization which can endure is a free one, and that freedom is not something to be won and then forgotten. It must be renewed, like soil after yielding good crops. Rewound, like a faithful clock. Exercise, like a healthy muscle. Liberty is a care, a vigilance, a caution. Free men who forget that lose their freedom. Go back 2,300 years. Not roughly 2,300, exactly 2,300 years. It is Greece. Forget what you've been told about ancient Greece. This is modern. Modern to the men who live in it and work it, who play games and worship gods and go to the theater and pay taxes. Athens is a busy place. Its markets are full, its industries flourishing. The mines at Laurium, the ones that were open not very long ago, are turning out silver almost too fast for the good of the economy. Prices are rising faster than wages. The rich are getting richer and the poor poorer. The banks are busy. Some of them busy failing. This crowd you hear happens to be waiting at the theater for the start of a performance of a play by Aristophanes. He was a fine poet, Aristophanes. Died only 20 years ago. Take a look at this crowd, talking the way at a great rate that women have dyed their hair blonde because Greek gentlemen prefer blondes. Some of the men are perfumed. Ladies of class have rouged their cheeks and painted their lips and penciled their eyebrows. Nobody wears a hat. You know, why don't you? Well, hats keep moisture from the hair, and that's what makes you prematurely gray. Didn't you know that? People say when they greet each other,
"Rejoice!
Rejoice!" That first fellow there is a barber and quite a gossip. Knows everybody's business in Athens. Listen to him.
Isn't that Hyperides sitting with the courtesan Phryne over there?
Yes, I believe it is. Pretty, isn't she?
So it's Hyperides now. Not long ago, it was Praxiteles.
Well, maybe she likes oratory better than sculpture.
Yes. Undoubtedly, that's the same reason Legiscium has taken on Isocrates.
I wonder if anyone ever told this talkative haircutter what King Archelaus of Macedon said when his barber asked him how he wanted his hair cut. "How do I want my hair cut?" the king said. "In silence." Somebody ought to tell him that. The crowd is quieting down now, and the play is about to begin. It's Lysistrata. But let's not stay. You've all seen Lysistrata anyway. Let's go across the peaceful city, straight across the Acropolis, the Parthenon, over the houses on the bluff, over the Nyx on the slope of the hill west of the Areopagus. See how clear the air is. They say that's what contributes to the keenness of the Attic mind. And sunny, too. Did you know that on the average, Athens has 300 sunny days out of the year? Now we're over the Aegean coast, where the light is full on the isles of the Cyclades and on the sparkling water. See the moving shadows on the hills. The hills where peasants toil all day to coax olives and grapes out of the poor soil. This is Greece, the poet's Greece, the philosopher's Greece, and it is beautiful. It's peaceful. This is the Greece of art and literature and drama, a tranquil country at peace with the world, enlightened, playing games, worshipping gods, educating its youth, busy, thriving, and at peace. Everything is calm in Athens. But look to the north. Look beyond the mountains. Look to Macedonia, where the new king Philip has lately been enthroned. He's no fool, Philip. He has plans already. He is building up a permanent, organized, professional army. He is not relying, like Athens, on amateur militia or on mercenaries. Has new tactics, too, new ideas on warfare. Listen to this old Macedonian captain tell about the army Philip's building up.
To begin with, there's the cavalry. 800 of them, trained to fight in close formation. Why, they can change the whole tactics at a single command. You've never seen better riders in your life nowhere. Then there's our infantry of peasants and mountaineers, lined up in the new phalanx formation. 16 rows of soldiers pointing their lances over the shoulders of the rows ahead of them. Each soldier carries a sword, which he can use after he's thrown his lance. And he wears a brass helmet and a coat of mail and a shield. Then behind the phalanx come the archers and a siege train with catapults and battering rams. Some army we're building.
Building for what? Philip building an army? The various city-states up and down the great peninsula are mostly free and happy, mostly confederated, mostly under Athens' protecting wing. Nobody is planning to attack Philip. Can it be that Philip has designs on Greece? But wait, his army, his new army that the captain spoke about, hasn't been tried out yet. Observe now. Philip will experiment with it against the hill tribes, which sometimes make trouble inland. Excellent results. The phalanx is a great success. So now he tries it on the city of Amphipolis, the Athenian colony which commands the gold mines nearby. It falls quickly. Philip takes it over, changes its names to Philippi. What do they think of this in Athens, in the streets of Athens, in the assembly, in the marketplace? Listen to the mutter.
This sort of thing has got to stop.
But hasn't Philip reassured the government of Athens he will return Amphipolis? Later on, he says. He has only peaceful intentions toward the city. A sudden invasion of the city of Pydna to the south. And soon after that, Potidaea. Still another city. What's going on in Athens these days?
The assembly is discussing the Persian situation. It's worried about the increase in armaments.
There's a new orator named Demosthenes who's just made his first public speech, urging certain reforms. A restrained and businesslike speech.
Nobody is concerned much about the dashing king of Macedonia. Nobody, that is, in Athens. But to the north and east, the citizens of Abdera and Maronea on the Thracian coast are greatly concerned, for Philip is attacking them. And now he swings around and takes Methone. That means trouble, for Methone belongs to Athens. Incensed Athenians are reckoning the conquests of this upstart king. Now,
Amphipolis, Pydna,
Potidaea,
Abdera, Maronea,
Methone. 6 cities. All in Philip's hands. Soon there are more, while Athens frets and fumes. Philip marches on. He invades Thessaly, annexes Magnesia, invades Thrace. Athens does not intervene. Will nobody in Athens do anything, say anything? Can't they see what's happening? Can't they see that Philip has made promises and broken them? cajoled and lied and bribed, attacked, invaded without cause. All Athens is abuzz with Philip now. Its allies are being attacked. The men of Athens are alarmed, confused. There are speculations and orations and accusations. Will no one set them straight? Perhaps Demosthenes. He rose to his feet a moment back and is already speaking to the assembly in the open day of Athens and the golden sun of this free, democratic city.
He cannot rest content with what he has conquered. He's always taking in more, everywhere casting his net around us while we sit idle and do nothing. When, Athenians, will you take the necessary action? What are you waiting for? Until you are compelled, I presume. I think that for a free people, there can be no greater compulsion than shame for their position. Or tell me, are you content to run around and ask one another, is there any news today? Could there be any news more startling than that a Macedonian is triumphing over Athenians and settling the destiny of Hellas? Is Philip dead, you ask? No, indeed, but he is ill. And what is that to you? Even if something happens to him, you will soon raise up a second Philip, if that is the way you attend to your affairs. For even this Philip has not grown great through his own unaided strength, so much as through our carelessness. We fail to learn the lesson that to manage a war properly, you must not follow the trend of events, but must forestall them. But you, Athenians, possessing unsurpassed resources, have never to this very day employed them aright. And yet you carry on war with Philip exactly as a barbarian boxes. For if Philip did nothing more, but were willing to rest satisfied with that he has already captured and subdued, I believe that some of you would be quite content with what must bring the deepest disgrace upon us and brand us as a nation of cowards. Personally, I am surprised that none of you Athenians is distressed and angry to find that at the beginning of the war, our aim was to punish Philip. But at the end, it is to escape injury at his hands. But surely it is obvious that he will not stop unless someone stops him. Truly, men of Athens, I do think...
Let's look around some more. There's a handsome display of jewelry here today.
And dreams of further...
All the men are wearing rings, some of them necklaces and bracelets.
He finds that there is none to follow.
Stilpo there, who... just came in a while ago, was carrying a walking stick with a gold knob. Very impressive. Aristotle, who is somewhere around here, is wearing at least a half dozen rings.
Know what he is going to do next. For of all fools, the rumor mongers are the worst. But if, putting rumors aside, we recognize that this man is our enemy, who has for years been robbing and insulting us, that wherever we once hoped to find help, we have found hindrance, that the future lies in our own hands, and if we refuse to fight now in Thrace, we shall perhaps be forced to fight here at home. If, I say, we recognize these facts, then we shall have done with idle words and shall come to a right decision. Our business is not to speculate on what the future might bring forth, but to be certain that it will bring disaster, unless you face the facts and consent to do your duty.
What happens after Demosthenes urges Athens to act soon? What happened?
The fact that they are now fighting not for glory, not for a strip of territory, but to avert the overthrow and enslavement of the fatherland. But if we leave these men too in the lurch, Athenians, and then Olympus is crushed by Philip, tell me what is to prevent him from marching henceforward just where he pleases. I wonder if any one of you in this audience watches and notes the steps by which Philip, weak at first, has grown so powerful. First he seized Amphipolis, next Pydna, then Potidaea,
After that Menthone. Lastly, he invaded Thessaly. Well, some of you may say, why tell us this now? Because, men of Athens, I want you to know and realize two things. First, what an expensive game it is to squander your interests one by one. And secondly, the restless activity which is ingrained in Philip's nature and which makes it impossible for him ever to rest on his laurels. I am afraid, men of Athens, that just as men who borrow money recklessly at high interest enjoy a temporary accommodation only to forfeit their estates in the end, so we may find that we have paid a heavy price for our indolence. And because we consult our own pleasure in everything, may hereafter come to be forced to do many of the difficult things for which we had no liking, and may finally endanger our possessions right here in Attica itself. I suggest that the case calls for two...
This is the Greece which has descended from the warriors who sank the fleet of Xerxes at Salamis, who routed Darius at Marathon. This is a hero's Greece, democratic, idealistic, the Greece of noble thoughts and talk that flows like wine.
You have more than any other nation has for military purposes. Observe and consider how Philip stands today. He hoped that on his first entry, he would carry all before him, and he finds himself completely mistaken. Reflect how eagerly Philip would march against you if he had such a chance as we have, and if the war were on our frontiers. Are you not ashamed if, having the opportunity, you lacked the courage to do to him what he would certainly do to you if he could? One more point, men of Athens. Do not forget that you can today choose whether you must fight there or Philip must fight here. If Olympus holds out, you will fight there to the detriment of his territory, while you enjoy in security the land which is your home. But if Philip takes Olympus, who is to prevent his marching hither?
Athens still does nothing. And meanwhile, decay is reaching deeper. In the midst of unprecedented wealth, poverty increases. Class despises class. Many rich men welcome the coming of Philip as an alternative to revolution. Already, as Socrates has said,
the rich have become so unsocial that those who own property would rather throw their possessions into the sea than lend aid to the needy, while those who are in poorer circumstances would less gladly find a treasure than seize the possessions of the rich.
But Demosthenes has still a lot to say about both Philip and the city-state's economy.
Is Philip not our enemy and a barbarian? Is any description too bad for him? But in the name of the gods, when we have abandoned all these places and almost helped Philip to gain them, shall we then ask who is to blame? But, says an objector, if our foreign policy has failed, there is great improvement in domestic affairs. And to what can you point in proof? To the walls we're whitewashing, the streets we're paving, the waterworks and the balderdash? Look rather at the men whose statesmanship has produced these results. Some of them were poor and now are rich. Some were obscure and now are eminent. Some have reared private houses more stately than our public buildings. While the lower the fortunes of the city have sunk, the higher have their fortunes soared. What is the cause of all this? And why, pray, did everything go well then that now goes amiss? Because then, the people, having the courage to act and to fight, controlled the politicians and were themselves the dispensers of all favors.
The rest were well content to accept at the people's hand honor and authority and reward. Now, on the contrary, the politicians hold the purse strings and manage everything, while you, the people, robbed of nerve and sinew, stripped of wealth and allies, have sunk to the level of lackeys and hangers-on, content if the politicians gratify you with a dole. And your manliness reaches its climax when you add your thanks for what is your own. You cannot, I suppose, have a proud and chivalrous spirit if your conduct is mean and paltry. For whatever a man's actions are, such must be his spirit.
Athens, sick of the disease that Demosthenes has diagnosed, does nothing further to aid Olynthus. Olynthus falls to Philip. The city is burned and its inhabitants sold into slavery. The list of devastation grows.
Amphipolis.
Pydna.
Potidaea.
Abdera.
Maranaea.
Methone.
Thessaly.
Magnesia.
Thrace.
Olynthus. And 32 other Greek cities. All destroyed by Philip, while Athens stands idly by. But now that Philip is bearing down, she makes overtures of peace. A treaty is concluded. But Demosthenes does not like it and continues to warn his city. Fellow Athenians like Isocrates rise in the assembly to attack Demosthenes.
I speak against those who make an uproar in the tribune. Against the men who, envious of the powerful monarch, unceasingly work to make him suspect. And who, regarding the general peace as an attack on liberty, sow disorder in the cities.
It is getting late for action now. Philip goes on despite the peace. He subdues Illyria, the intrigues in their Peloponnese, and Athens sends Demosthenes to counteract Philip's influence. Because of this, Philip sends envoys to Athens to protest against charges of bad faith. Who in the free and democratic city of Athens will reply to him? Who do you suppose?
If anyone mistakes for peace an arrangement which will enable Philip, when he has seized everything else, to march upon us, he has taken leave of his senses. And the peace that he talks of is one that you observe toward Philip, but not Philip toward you. That is the advantage which he is purchasing by all his expenditure of money. That he should be at war with you, but that you should not be at war with him. Does he not write explicitly in his letters, I am at peace with those who are willing to obey me? Neither the Greek nor the barbarian world is big enough for the fellow's ambition. And we Greeks see and hear all this and express our indignation. We cannot combine. We cannot take any pledge of help or friendship. But we idly watch the growing power of this man, each bent in profiting by the interval afforded by another's ruin, taking not a thought, making not an effort for the salvation of Greece. Also, you must reflect that it is impossible to defeat the enemies of our city until you have chastised those who, within our very walls, make themselves their servants. What are we to do? Perhaps some of my hearers have long been eager to ask that question. I solemnly promise that I will answer it, and will also move a resolution for which you can vote, if so disposed. To begin with ourselves, we must make provision for our defense. I mean with war galleys, funds, and men. For even if all other states succumb to slavery, we surely must fight the battle of liberty. This is a task for you. It was for you that your ancestors won this proud privilege and bequeathed it to you at great and manifold risk. These are my views, and these are my proposals. And if they are carried out, I believe that even now
we may retrieve our fortune. If anyone has anything better to propose, let him speak and advise. But whatever you decide, I pray heaven it may be to your advantage.
But Greece fell. Greece went down at the Battle of Chaeronea, to be known through the ages as the death blow to the aspirations of a great culture, the triumph of a conqueror who taught men how to kill over a culture which taught men how to live. Macedonia over Greece. A Macedonia which, while speaking Greek all those years, failed to produce a single writer, sculptor, orator, scientist, philosopher, failed to contribute anything but bloodshed and disaster to the state of Greece. Chaeronea was a lost cause. Lost because the spirit of Marathon was not renewed. Because an understanding people did not understand replenishment. That the soil must be restored. The clock rewound. The muscle exercised. You've been listening to Fragment from a Lost Cause, written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin, as program number 19 of 26 by Corwin. The words of Demosthenes were extracted literally from his famous Philippica and Olynthiacs, and in no instance were invented. Demosthenes was played by Everett Sloan, and the narrator was Hal Jameson. The special musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Next week at this time, the Columbia Workshop will present number 20 of 26 by Corwin, The Human Angle. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WBNS, Columbus.